Hi, this is Augusta Nielsen, Glam from Wigwam. You're listening to and watching CMS TV.
Turn it up. You're listening to Live and Loud with the Lord Nelson, that is.
Finally, when is the full album available? When does Freedom's Door come out? Friday, April 5th. The full album will drop. You can stream it. You can buy the CD. We'll see if we can get it together to do vinyl as well, because that's my hope. But you will most definitely be able to get a CD. You'll definitely be able to stream it, download it, and do what you will with it on Friday, April 5th. We're releasing through Dr. Music Records. Super excited. It's going to be available everywhere. So make sure you come and get it. I don't think you'll be disappointed at all. And thanks for checking us out.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, you know who it is. It's the big guy with the big show, the Lord. Ah, Nelson, that is. Yes, indeed. From the podcast Live and Loud with the Lord on the CMS Network with Five Royals Entertainment. And ladies and gentlemen, you see him right there. You see the guy right there. We're going to have a great conversation. He's all in. He's got a royal flush. He's going all in. If it's going to be love, we're going to have a great time and a great conversation and stuff. So, but before, as always, you know, I like to read a little something about my guests to big them up, to let them know I have the utmost respect for them. And we'll do it a little something like this. Ladies and gentlemen, I am looking forward to this conversation with this amazing artist who has poured his heart and soul into his new album, Freedom's Door. His passionate and moving lyrics complement the incredible orchestration that is displayed with every song, start to finish. And it takes you on a listening journey of insightfulness. It really does. The listener will feel the energy in his vocals and the awesome musicianship that speaks beautifully from the lead to the bass and drums that are in perfect concert with each other. I am blessed and honored to have this talented young man land his musical gift on the Live and Loud with the Lord runway. It's beautiful, man. And without further ado, I welcome for you the outstanding Mr. Peter Wilson. Yes, indeed. What's going on, bro?
That was a serious intro, Lord Nelson.
Hey, man. I gotta give love to everybody, man. I go and I dig into your catalog and I listen to music and I have a great time with it and it just helps me out. So I like to write as I'm listening to the music, man. So it's a great thing, man. So you see, I hope you don't mind me putting the pictures up because it's all about you. I just wanted to make it. I used to have it where I had all my stuff back here, but I was like, no. Let's make it about the guests more. It's really about them. It's not about you. So yeah, it's all like, up.
It's almost, as long as you don't have any baby pictures, because it becomes like this is your life.
I didn't find any, man. I was looking for them.
Thankfully.
No, it's all up, man. So the first question is always, is where are you from, bro?
So I'm from New York City, specifically Queens, New York.
Queens.
And that's actually where I still live today. Yeah. So I'm a Queens, New York City guy. And actually, the stuff that you hear is all recorded here too, believe it or not.
Oh, really? Written,
recorded between Manhattan and New York City, Manhattan, New York City, or Queens, where we track everything. So, yep. Born and raised kind of, had some time when I was younger. My father was from Jamaica, so I also spent a lot of time in Jamaica when I was very young. Yeah, growing up. So, but yeah, I'm a New York City guy. Got it.
Awesome. So what's the best thing about being from Queens, man?
The best thing is that it is the, and this is true, believe it or not, you can cross-reference this. This is the most diverse area, concentrated area in the world, so they say. So the coolest thing about being from New York, from Queens, New York specifically, is that you just are immersed in this diversity in different neighborhoods. And the cool thing is that it's not all locked away. Sometimes, you know, people say, oh, well, I have a diverse area, but they're kind of like sectioned off or segregated. Queens certainly has its areas where there's certain ethnic groups that, you know, that show up, or this is kind of their hood, but everyone mixes together, man. So it really allows for like you to kind of grow up in this very mixed neighborhood. So, you know, whether it be hanging out with like Guyanese kids, or my best friend was Indian growing up, to being in like a Korean. I grew up kind of also in an area that had a lot of Korean and Chinese folks. Right. And then we had like people from Bangladesh, and my friends that were my black friends that lived in certain areas right there, that their families came from down south. Then there are certain areas of Queens that are straight up Caribbean. So Jamaican, Trinidadian, you know, and the like. So all of it's kind of thrown together, you know, and then you have the old school Queens folks that may have been here, you know, from Ireland or Italian neighborhoods. So you literally get it all in this neighborhood. And the thing is, you get a little spoiled because you kind of are just used to dealing with different people, different cultures, different religious practices, different music and art, which is really kind of the thing about it. So then when you kind of venture out a little bit outside of New York City proper, you kind of are like a little astounded by everyone being like one kind of background, you know, that would be my mind. So when I would go out to Long Island, which is just outside here, you'd start to see, I'd be like, wait, where is everyone? Why is everyone like white in this area? Or why is everyone this, you know, this, right. Where is it? Where is the diversity? So then you start to realize, wow, this is a very unique kind of situation. As I got older, I've learned to appreciate it a lot more. And just really, it's something that definitely leads to the core of me as being an artist, and me, probably my worldview in general. So that's the coolest thing. So, you know, and what comes with that is like great food, great like music, like I was saying to you, great art, great history, just having a little more awareness of things, maybe checking out things like whether it be literature or just like what's happening in the news. Mm-hmm. You pay a little more attention to different areas because you're like, oh, well, I have a friend that's this. I wonder what's going on here. Or I have a, you know, I date a girl that was from here, so I'm kind of interested in what's going on in that country now, you know. So you have that kind of spark that's different, and it's very much it. You feel it on the subway train, you know, like you're on the train and people are speaking all these different languages, reading different magazines, going on their phone, checking out music that you're hearing. Sometimes people, you know, brothers are on the phone blasting like, you know, Bhangra music, which is kind of cool, or playing like, you know, I'm playing salsa or whatever it is. So you have all of that kind of like that makes up this thing that's Queens. So I really, really, I love that a lot. And I think it, like I said, I think it's definitely informed who I am as a person and who I am as an artist.
I'm going to tell you something, how great that answer was. So my next question to you was going to be, New York is definitely a melting pot. How do you feel you were influenced by such a smorgasbord of cultures beyond music? You know, man, listen, we're already rolling, man. I had goosebumps. I was like, he's on it. He's in my head, man. It's beautiful, man. Listen, that is great. And that is the thing that I've been to a few places, but New York is one of the places that was beyond my expectations. You know, I thought I knew what it was going to be. But when I got there, because we have some family in Harlem, and when we got there, I was just like, man, wow. You know, because as a youth, I was just like, man, you know, especially with hip-hop and stuff, I was like, man, I'm from Queens. I'm from New York. I used to, that's where I'm from. That's where I'm from. Right. I wanted to be a part of that greatness that they showed on television, man. So you being able to have that and all the different cultures, man, and just embracing that and soaking that in and speaking so well about it, so you know that you've enjoyed that, man. So, you know, just like they said, New York City's the greatest city in the world, man. So I mean, how can you argue with that, man? You know, I'm a Southern kid.
Yeah, I mean, think out, about man. It.
Good.
No, I know. And there are elements of the South I like too a lot. But you know, New York, like you get really spoiled when you think about it. Like I grew up with like great hip hop, great hardcore, you know, metal, regular rock, people kind of doing, I mean, New York had all this alternative stuff before it was called alternative.
Right.
You know, there was always, people were always trying to like experiment and do things in different ways, whether it be in the hard rock genre or in the hip hop thing. I mean, I don't think a group like, you know, Tribe or De La Soul or all those groups could have come from almost anywhere else. Mm. It kind of had to be like, you know, New York City had to be the area where all that emerged. And what was cool is also is that like, I think there's just a respect for art in general, you know, so like you kind of feel it in the street. And people, you know, listen, people, I heard these great salseros, who were singing their butts off coming when I was coming home from the train on the train yesterday. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of people were stopping, checking them out. They're, you know, hustling, doing whatever, but there's like, you can tell they're not just doing it like, yeah, they're trying to make money, but there's a soul there. So, you know, I was like, you know, I got, you know, caught up. I'm going to stand there for a bit and check out what they're doing. I heard this woman near our old rehearsal space in the city. And she was someone, she used to audition for, I guess, a lot of Broadway stuff, but never got anything. Mm-hmm. So she was like, well, you know, screw this. I'm going to just sing in the, right. at 42nd Street, right in the heart of that. And she has this gorgeous voice and killing it. And people, I mean, literally, you'd see hundreds and hundreds of people around her. And it always made me, you know, even when I'm having a rough day, mm-hmm. when you see that, you can't help but smile. It inspires you. Kind of, you go, hey, this is when I'm a part of this kind of thing. And it forces you, I think, and I always say this to people, you know, with all due respect for a lot of other scenes, New York City, when you're coming up as a musician, you're performing live in New York, it forces you to really step up your game because there are so many great musicians that are right. born and bred in New York, and then other people are attracted to New York. So other great artists and musicians come to New York City right. and they join bands or they become part of like a collective or they're, you know, solo artists. So when you're like playing in the city, everyone kind of sits around. They're like, all right, what you got? Because I've seen it all. And I've seen it at the height. Right, so you really learn to kind of say, okay, I got to go out there and really project who I am. I got to make sure I can really perform and sing and play well. Right. It just forces you to kind of step back. I can't just stand there. Yeah. I have to really perform. I have to be about what I'm singing, which I think is super important. And that's something that kind of carried me through. Because in New York, you have to definitely kind of know that, hey, I have a really mixed audience. I have people that have seen a lot of great art and a lot of great performers. So if I want to kind of get an audience really interested in what I'm doing, I got to be able to sell it and I got to be able to really mean it. So that's also a great part of being an artist and growing up in New York is that, like I saw the greats kind of hone their craft on small stages and then kind of explode. So that's really exciting too. And it forces you to kind of to say, okay, I want to be part of that culture. I want to make sure that people come back, you know?
Indeed. New York's got a different energy, man, but it's a beautiful one. Most definitely. So describe for us the early years of Peter Wilson. What was it like growing up in the Wilson household? And do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I do. I have two older half brothers who I didn't grow up with. I got to know in my teenage years. Right. But I grew up with, it was me and my sister, mm-hmm. And she's 5 years younger than me. And we grew up in a very cool, very loud household that had a lot going on. My dad was a Black Jamaican and came to the U.S. after he met my mom. My mom was a white Ukrainian woman who was a refugee and escaped war. Her and her family escaped war, and so they kind of met. And just, it was like this eternal love story that was really tremendous. When they got married in the United States, their marriage was illegal in 13 states. So, you know, they were married in, I think, 64, right. if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, there was a lot going on. But there, it was a tremendous love and respect for each other. My dad was like, you know, my dad and mom worked really hard. And they originally were in Brooklyn, and then they moved to my mom's family was in Queens, and they convinced them to come out to Queens because the schools were good. And my mom got pregnant with me. And then I grew up just like I said, immersed in music. My mom was a great singer. Excuse me. She sang with a choir, a Ukrainian choir that toured the world, particularly in Europe. But she toured a lot, sang constantly. They were very popular in New York City, performed at some of the biggest venues, Carnegie Hall, Radio City, performed at like St. Patrick's Cathedral all the time. They were really like this superstar group, had albums out, and I watched her and her friends coordinate records, literally from liner notes to like album covers when I was a kid. So I was watching. So it was cool because I was brought up with a lot of music. My father was a huge jazz head and ska fan. So he loved, you know, and both of them were huge reggae fans, which was great. So I got to go to see all the greats individually. I saw Marley when I was a child. I saw Peter Tosh and Buddy Wailer and Third World and Burning Spear and all these artists. So I was going, my mom was cool. You know, she worked in the East Village. So, and she performed, her rehearsals were in the East Village. So I discovered all of these great record stores and comic book shops and just cool places to read music magazines. And I just, you know, I was growing up in New York City in the 80s was magical. It was a little scary in places and times, and you definitely found yourself in places maybe you thought, I probably shouldn't be in this area at this time. Right. And, you know, because I was pretty tall, I kind of got into a lot of places, like, you know, whether it be art shows or clubs that I wasn't supposed to quite get into at the time. Mm-hmm. But it was really cool to do that. Some people just look the other way. And it was a whole movement, and it was natural. It was like literally block to block. But I kind of I was bouncing between where I lived in Queens and you know, growing up in the East Village and hanging out and going to different neighborhoods, like in Harlem. And I went to music and art high school, mm-hmm. which became LaGuardia High School now. Okay. And that was really amazing. I was it was around some of the most brilliant, talented people you can imagine in high school. And where everyone was kind of an outsider in their respective neighborhood or schools. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we were kind of thrown together and we all could find a place. Because all of a sudden it wasn't strange that you were, you know, I studied art and music in art high school, but it wasn't strange to do music or to do art or to dance or to be an actor or actress. And, you know, so it was really tremendous. And all of this kind of this stew made it happen. And my parents were extremely extremely supportive of, you know, of me, you know, pursuing art. It was kind of almost unspoken. It was just kind of part of it. And, you know, as long as I could stay out really late and do things and go. I remember going to see the Bad Brains in, I think, 87 at CBGB's. I wasn't even supposed to be at the, you know, legally at the show. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how I got in, but I remember telling my mom, I'm going to go see the Bad Brains. And my mom's like, all right, well, it's like a Thursday night. So you got school tomorrow. So, you know, as long as you call me, I used to have all these quarters and call her like before the show, after the show, I'm getting on the train. And, you know, you sleep 2 hours and shower and got to get up. But that was very cool. They were pretty much like, hey, it's all good. As long as you get up and you don't miss school, you know, and you do what you have to do. They allowed me a lot of freedom. So it was very, very, it was very special. I'm very indebted to them for that. And what was cool is that you got to see, I got to see how my parents like really treasured music, mm-hmm. And art in general, but music specifically. Right. How like Nina Simone in my household was like holy, you know, people like that. The Wailers were like this major thing, you know, and listening to records and watching my father kind of open up his, you know, Thelonious Monk records and checking them out and reading liner notes. And he would, you know, I'd ask him about the record. He'd be like, oh, well, before I talk to you about it, why didn't you read this? So you start to learn to read about, you know, in I think the lost art of the cover liner notes are right. So when I would get records, I'd study the records, you know, like want to know everything about them, or at least look at pictures. Like I'm a huge Kiss fan. Mm-hmm. So their stuff was, you know, these gatefold sleeves, and you saw them like on live too. And Steve's like, what's going on? But you start to read, not just for the lyrics, but like the production behind it. Who's the engineer? Right. You know, where they record this? You know, why they go here to here? I noticed in the last album, they went somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So all these things, you kind of start to pay attention to and realize that like music was not just like, yeah, it's your art and you become good at something within music or maybe several things, but then that there's a whole other culture behind it. Like, how do you capture sound? Where do you go? What's the live experience like versus a recorded experience? You know, how do you get really good rehearsing so much and all that? So seeing my mom and her choir rehearse every week, literally I would go visit her every week and they would rehearse sometimes if they had bigger shows several times a week. And you recognize that dedication. That's not just like, hey, you're talented. You get up on stage and you just do your thing. Or you make an audition, you do your thing. It's like, no, this is work.
Yes.
You know, different hours, you know, better than I do, Mr. Nelson, that this is work. And a lot of times people see the show part, but you know, how are you doing everything else? And so that was really great to have that experience in my household and to see a very loving family that, you know, like argued big, but loved even bigger. You know what I mean? Like everything was loud and there were always people in and out of my house and growing up. And it was a very special place to be and something I'm very thankful for. So that kind of formed my formative, you know, experience growing up.
No, it's awesome. And so much love that your parents were progressives and, just once again, you were immersed in so much culture, New York, and then plus your mother being Ukrainian, your father being Jamaican, man, come on, man. You get things from everywhere, man, and then allowing you to see these different cultures, to be in Jamaica and see this and listening. So you're saying Third World and Peter Tosh and all these different, and I'm just like, wow, man, that had to be amazing. You know, I'm just like, whoo, you know, and then once again, you said your mom, Ukrainian, singing, what you said it was a choir?
She sang what was called Dumka, D-U-M-K-A, and they actually, like, they toured, you know, they pulled out records, and I used to tell my friends, oh, yeah, my mom sings in a choir, and a lot of people think, oh, you know, like, church kind of thing, and you're like, no, it's actually a little more than that, you know? And then they were like, wait a minute, she's performing at Carnegie Hall? I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's kind of a big deal. And, oh, no, they would be like, hey, where's your mom speaking? Oh, well, she's in Toronto. And, you know, the other cool thing was, and I think this kind of set the path for my life, too, is like there was a hustle to it. Mm. So, like, kind of like, yeah, you wanted music. I got into music because it's just something that calls me. Like, I have to do it. So, you know, I have these moments where it's really successful and you do something really great. You play a rash of shows. It's exciting. You're featured in a magazine, whatever. Right. And then you know that there are moments where no one's trying to hear what you do. Those lonely moments, right? And but my mom and dad were very clear on, like, hey, you're going to have to hustle. And that means you might have to work a kind of creative job or do whatever. Right. But you keep music as the thing that is the most important. And then allow other things just to feed it. And that kind of always stuck with me. It's like, okay, well, I never kind of considered like, hey, I'm going in this and I'm going to make a whole lot of money and become super famous. Mm-hmm. I kind of always knew that, hey, this is a grind. It's a hustle. It's hard. But one, do the music that you love, because at the end of the day, that's your legacy, right? So, you know, if someone picks up what you're on or what you're doing and they hear it, you want it to be real. You don't want it to be like, well, I was trying to make this hit record, or yeah, I got this record deal, or I got distributed, or my song got featured on something, but it's not really what I'm about. And, you know, don't listen to that one. No, it's supposed to be part of that journey. It's supposed to be something that you believe in, and hopefully people will check it out. You know, I remember like 20 years ago for me, it was like, got to get the record deal, got to get the deal and whatever. And actually when I stopped caring about that, when I just said, you know what, I'm going to just keep doing what I do.
Yes.
And I have to, and I'll figure out how to release music and I'll figure out how to pay for records and I'll hustle and we'll do tours and we'll scrap and we'll do what we do. Mm-hmm. And I'll just keep doing and keep showing up, but I'm going to make sure the music is fantastic and I believe in everything. I'm going to make sure the production of it is great and I'm going to make sure it's really me and it's unusual and it doesn't sound like everything that you hear. Mm-hmm. That's ironically when, besides mentally becoming more free, that's when things start to happen. You know, sometimes like you bring that energy that you really are like, hey, this is what I'm about. Mm-hmm. And if you dig it, great. If not, I'm going to keep doing what I do.
Of course.
You know? And I think that that's actually been one of the things that's helped not only my band Four Trips Ahead, but also me and my solo thing, really just kind of like, that's my mark. Everything else doesn't matter to me. Like, I'll figure out the other stuff, you know, but the music and what I'm writing and sonically what it's sounding like, the experience that people have when they hear it, I want to be really clear on, you know, what it is and what I'm trying to say.
Indeed. Well, look, man, once again, I'm like, did I send him these questions or something, man? Because he's just
sorry, I'm rambling.
No, it's love. I love it, man. I always say I love it when people are, that just means we're having a great conversation, man. And I love digging into people's history. It makes me feel good, you know, and I pray that the listeners love it because I know I'm enjoying it. I mean, I'm really into what we're doing and what, you know, this conversation that we're having. And so, you know, my thing with is, what is something your mother and father instilled in you that you appreciate now more than you did then? You talking about something about something, man. So that's
Wow. I don't know if, you know, it's so funny. There's so many little things, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, like when you're in it, it was, you know, I lost both my parents like within a 3-year period, 2.5 years from one another.
Yes.
And so it was really like, it was like a 1-2 punch. And then right after that, I lost one of my best friends and you kind of go through all this stuff,
yes.
you know, emotionally, you kind of are, you're in it. One of the things that really helped though, in the middle of that, was that my son was born.
Mm-hmm.
which was really amazing. So I went from literally like losing, you know, almost kind of, it sounds strange, but people that have lost their parents kind of know, you almost feel, no matter how old you are, you feel like an orphan. You know, you lost that like anchor, that foundation. If you had a good relationship with your folks, it's really, it's like, you know, you kind of feel rudderless. You're kind of like you're spinning. But having, you know, having my wife and having my son kind of at that time really anchor me was just amazing. Mm-hmm. So, what I think one of the things that was really great about them, or one of the things that they taught me that I didn't recognize at the time, mm-hmm. was they were very positive people, but they often would tell me, hey, they're going to be people that just because you're in the room, they're not going to dig what you're about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times, especially when I was younger, I was like, what do you mean? I'm about like light and, you know, I love this, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not so much like you don't think about those things. You think, why would anyone like deliberately not like want to help or not dig who I am if they don't know who I am?
Right.
You're kind of like naive in that way. Mm-hmm. And as I got older, and especially my teenage years, you know, and I'm not even just talking about like, you know, the racial stuff or ethnic prejudice or any of that. That was something that when I was young, even in as great as New York is, you experienced it. You saw it. I saw it with my dark skinned father in particular, mm-hmm. and just his grace and the way he handled stuff, and that he was no joke, but he also was very proud of what he was, and he wasn't going to stoop to certain levels.
Of course.
So I grew up with that, but they were talking about like a heavier kind of thing, and like just were like, hey, listen, you're going to have to suit up, mm-hmm. You know, and especially if you're doing music. But if you're talking about something that's truthful, or whether it be your political beliefs or just who you are as a person, be prepared for people to throw rocks at you. And that's not always going to be easy. And that you're often going to be attacked just because of that. And I think when I was younger, I experienced some of it, but it didn't really come to the fore until I got older. And I could say that definitely a lot of it through, you know, my dealings in the music industry and everything like that. And people just trying to warm up to you because they think you have a thing that they want, right. Or just people that are trying to dim your light. You know, it's hard for me because I kind of don't look at life like that. I want to always kind of bring light. And if I could help people, I try to, and I don't think on that level, but there are a lot of people that kind of just sit there and they're angry about a lot of things that haven't happened for them. And they kind of, you know, they're the vampires, right? That kind of really just, or they can kind of suck the life out of a room. And you have to learn how to navigate that. And I think my folks, probably individually as people, they were really positive and like that. And when they got together, I think that because of their backgrounds and, you know, and a lot of people in society having issues with them being together just because of their so-called racial makeup, mm-hmm. they were kind of used to people coming for them all the time.
Right.
You know, and, you know, my parents were, like I said, were very positive people, right? Mm-hmm. Had this air of positivity. They attracted a lot of, they had really good friends. Some were very famous, very wealthy people to folks that didn't have much.
Right.
And I always loved that about them. They kind of were able to kind of bounce in different circles and always taught me and my sister to respect everyone, you know, from no matter what their backgrounds were. So, you know, my sister and I grew up having this kind of interesting situation where we had some, you know, our family in Jamaica was not well off. They were very mm-hmm. working class, but we had some family members that weren't very well off.
Right.
And so we literally were, you know, hung out with people that we loved that lived in kind of like, you know, better made kind of shacks. And we were around people that didn't have anything, but were just amazing human beings mm-hmm. that were royalty in our eyes. And we knew a lot of people that were really wealthy and were very cold individuals, had a lot of material things, but not much else. So we kind of learned about all those worlds. And in the midst of that, my parents would say things to me or drop little tidbits about like, people are going to come for you, even if you haven't done anything wrong. And you have to build that armor up. And I think my mother in particular, because she toured a lot and because she sang, and, you know, my uncle was also who gave me my first guitar and was this great musician and just incredible musician. Was friends with like Robbie Robertson from the band and kind of hung out, you know, he was in and out of the drug culture too. He kind of knew the whole deal and he was really a brilliant person. And I think my mother saw a lot of that and saw people kind of used their power to kind of hurt folks intentionally. And they would say, you know, my mom and dad would say, listen, you know, build up that armor because people are going to come for you. And I think when I was younger, I kind of thought I knew what that meant, but I didn't really know what it meant. And as I got older, definitely engaged in the music industry, you realize like, hey, you have to covet what you have and you have to build up that thick skin. And there are going to be people that no matter what the situation is, even if you haven't done anything to them, they're just going to come for you. And it's not always, I mean, some of it can be tied to racism and racial stuff. Some of it can be tied to what the industry wants you to be.
Yes.
And if you don't fit, you know, in hearing my music, you probably realize that, yeah, it's definitely hard rock focused, but there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Of course.
And so many times I've had people come to me and say, hey, man, if you did stuff just a little more like this, I could get you signed to this production deal, or I can get you on this label, or I can get this money behind you. And you have to learn to kind of say no. That's not what I do. And I love you and thank you for trying to put me on, but no. Or people that really dig what you're doing and they just kind of want to suck the life out of you. I think I was talking to you about the vampire thing, which is real. And, you know, as you get older, you start to realize like some of the vampires travel in the music industry, some of it travels in life. Like, you know, when you're happily married and you have a child and things are okay, and maybe you don't have as much money as some other people, but there's this clarity that you're happy with who you are and who you have. People try to come for you. People try to mess that up for you. So you have to learn to kind of navigate those streams and so forth. And, you know, sometimes those storms, right? So that if I was to try to think about something, I think my folks were really good at like kind of saying, you have to kind of be a couple steps ahead of paying attention to people's hidden agendas. You know what I mean? So that's something that I think really came into fruition for me when I was older and recognizing like, wow, this is really, there's a system that's kind of works that way, but there are people that make that system, right? And they're ones that are, they're cogs in the system. So that was probably the best kind of secretive tidbit stuff that really came into fruition. Those seeds were planted in me, but they didn't really bloom until they were kind of gone. Right. You know what I mean?
That's awesome because, you know, what I like to say, my quote is, the Lord Nelson quote is that the world is not crazy, it's the people in it. It's the people in it, man. You just look around and you want to, listen, I'm like your parents and like yourself, I'm a very positive person. But man, you have to be careful. And the older you get, the more you just like, as you say, those vampires, and they're out there and they are waiting on you and they're looking to bring you down. And I just want to spread love, man. And I always say that, you know, everybody loves me. You're either going to love me or you're going to love to hate me, but you love me. But so it's beautiful. So that's just how I live my life, man. That's what I do. But that was great, man. I appreciate that. So as a teenager, I know you listen to a lot of music, but what music flooded your brain the most that you just couldn't get enough of?
Oh, man, that's really hard. You can see behind me, right?
Yes.
But, you know, like, so I'll tell you, like, if gun to my head, you got it. It's like, Peter, I don't want to hear about you. Listen to everything. I really do listen to everything.
I do too.
And people that know me know that, like, in my house, literally, like, you heard everything, every type of music. Right. And given the same respect. Mm-hmm. Also, my parents were, and, you know, and for me, the turntable was kind of like, they'd say, hey, put on whatever you want. Sunday mornings were jazz. Mm-hmm. That was just my dad's thing. I'm sleeping in, and when I wake up, we're listening to jazz all day, or we're listening to like whatever. Saturday nights were like reggae music and really big party music, even if there wasn't anyone coming over. It was just that was kind of thing. So there were certain times of the day I was like, I'm not messing with my folks' stuff, and until I got old enough to get my own stereo, right? Mm-hmm. But there was very much like anything you wanted to put on, you could check out, and they would listen. And what was so cool is that they were not like, you know, sometimes my dad or mom might say something kind of funny, mm-hmm. but they were never judgmental. It was always like, hey, whatever you want to hear, which I remember distinctly. I think my turntable was broken and I was saving up for a new one. And I remember distinctly getting like Anthrax's Spreading the Disease. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to play that record. And I remember I was like, all right, Mom. And I even warned her, I showed her the album cover. I was like, all right, Mom, this is going to be. And my mom was like, no, put it on.
Right.
And we listened to it. And I mean, it, you know, that's some serious speed metal stuff, you know. And I'm waiting for my mom. I'm like sitting and I'm like loving it. I'm thinking, oh, I can't wait. My mom comes in here. She's going to just. And what was so cool is I remember my mom saying, you know, she said, this is just really faster, hard music. But she mm-hmm. said, but if you listen to the singer, he's actually got a really good voice. And I see what he's doing. And there were these places where there were harmonies. And she, you know, she's saying the harmonies are more like shouting in the harmonies. Mm-hmm. But she was totally. And I remember thinking, my mom's effing amazing. Because
right.
I mean, listen, like for her and her age to be like throwing down speed, you know, Anthrax, early Anthrax, speed metal, that's not apologetic.
Right.
You know, she and her to be able to find things in it that she kind of dug was cool. So there's that. If I was really honest, like the things that like I like, and I call this like rebel music. Mm-hmm. I like stuff that felt a little more dangerous.
Okay.
You know, so I loved reggae music, but like conscious reggae music that was down and dirty. I listened mm-hmm. to a lot of it, you know, and at that time you had, you know, popular stuff like, you know, like Third World, but I liked stuff like Black Uhuru, which was kind of like, it was like popular, but there was like almost, there was badass rebel stuff, you know, thing going on. I loved stuff like that. And it meant a lot to me. And I liked a lot of early dance hall for that too, because it had that kind of, you know, badass thing going on because it came from, you know, Trenchtown. It came from sound system culture. With that, I loved early hip hop a lot because of that. I still argue with people, if you want to play the hardest record, put on the first Run DMC album.
Yes,
it's just beats and voices, but it's the way it's recorded. You know, they were 18, 19, and they were like, this is it. So I'm going to give it all. Well, so I love stuff like that. I tend to like things that are edgier. So I was mentioning like Anthrax.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I heard the Bad Brains, it was like it was a revelation. It was the yellow tape. Everyone had the yellow tape. And it's funny because I only bought vinyl when I was a kid. I mm-hmm. would buy tapes here and there, but I remember that you had to get the raw yellow tape, you know? So hang out with my skater friends, hang out with my hardcore punk people. They all had the yellow tape. Whenever I would hear the Bad Brains, right. I was like, it's this yellow tape. And I remember going specifically and having to go to a bunch of shops to find the Bad Brains yellow tape. So stuff like that, I really liked. You know, I liked a lot of like, I'm a big fan of like a lot of the so-called second wave, like the glam metal kind of thing, like 80s stuff. But what was funny is that by the time I was in the end of my, you know, kind of mid to end of my teenage years, and I wanted to sing, I didn't look like anyone on MTV.
Right.
I didn't look like Vince Neil or Bret Michaels or, you know, or who else, you know, like any of the David Coverdale. I love Whitesnake, but like, I don't sound like that. I don't look like that. I didn't have those experiences, you know, everyone's talking about like sex and girls and kind mm-hmm. of, you know, rock and roll. And I didn't have those experiences at all. It wasn't me.
Right.
So for me, the revelations really came in heavy where I felt like my scene was happening was like when I remember it very well, it was like 88. And it was the perfect time because I was, you know, it was my late teenage years and like, you had King's X.
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking about this with someone. The first King's X album, you had Living Color, who I got to see really early.
Right.
You had Jane's Addiction's Nothing Shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Faith No More. Yes, I remember those records well. Because all of a sudden, it was like things were kind of perking up that didn't fit that mala at all.
Mm.
And people were digging it. And it was like a buzz. And then I was also, I really got into like Voivod very early. I saw Voivod. Their speed metal stuff didn't appeal to me as much, but they put out an album in like 89 called Nothing Face, which knocked me, or maybe it was 88. I remember 88, 89. Again, around that time. And it was like kind of weird. It was kind of proto metal, prog metal, talking about robots and all sorts of stuff. But what was cool about it is that you had groups like Fishbone, right? Were just amazing to me on record and live, just like you couldn't touch them.
Great live,
and what was cool is I felt like all of that was taking all these influences that I had, and they were like, hey, we're going to just sound different, and we don't care. We don't care if it gets played on MTV as much, or we're going to do it despite what's being played. Mm-hmm. But in particular, like, so all those groups really spoke to me. Like, when I think about the time where, like, and emotionally I was going through a lot of stuff, you know, like a lot of teenagers do, mm-hmm. and also kind of being a little frustrated that you don't fit in neatly to a lot of places. And you know, despite having great loving parents and all that, you know, there's a feeling of sometimes powerlessness or just feeling you're not seeing yourself, you're not hearing yourself. And it was very daunting. And I remember the group that really knocked me out, and I'll always be that first King's X album, Brothers, like, well, they were found, you know, found in Texas, right? Hearing that record, I saw them, I went to go see, there was a Megaforce party, and they had the Stormtroopers of Death, right? We're doing Speak English or Die. Mm-hmm. And I love that record. And so as an Anthrax fan, SOD fan, I was like, let me go to this Megaforce show. And they had a bunch of new artists playing before that were signed to Megaforce. And King's X came on stage. And I see Doug Pinnick with, you know, a mohawk and playing left-hand bass. And he's this black guy, and they're dressed up kind of like these Beatles looking things. I was like, and right away everyone was like, wow, this is kind of cool. What's this about? And then they started playing, and they literally had to play their whole album because people kept giving them encores. And Doug finally said, hey, this is the last song. We don't have any more songs kind of thing. But it was literally like, I mean, I can't tell you, Lord Nelson, it was literally I'm spiritual, but not very religious, but it was like a religious experience for me because I finally felt like this, they get it. Mm-hmm. Like whatever is going on here, it like hit me in a way that music hadn't, like newer music kind of hadn't hit me in, you know, it just really spoke to me. And I remember running downtown because it was like early enough. I left early. I saw SOD for a bit, and they were really funny, but I just kind of ran out because I just had King's X on my mind.
Right.
And I, and of course, I got to record stores too late. So I remember the next day, I went all the way back down to the Village just to find this record. I found a promo of it. And that record, Out of the Silent Planet, was like my Bible.
Right.
Until their second album came out, which then became Gretchen, which where they kind of really blew up a lot more. But I remember those records, like a record like that meant so much to me because it was like, it's okay to not understand things. The album is a lot about not fitting in, mm-hmm. trying to find some spiritual center, trying to kind of figure out like where you stand in the midst of things.
Right.
You know, just like heavy stuff. And like lyrically and vocally, they were doing things that were amazing. And they mm-hmm. still do. I mean, I love Doug and those brothers so much. But like their harmonies were fantastic, but they were really heavy. But they weren't like the production wasn't this overproduced cheesy metal kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The lyrics meant something. There was just so much there to unpack. And so, like I said, there were groups like Jane's and Living Color and, you know, and then later on, people that Jimmy, who is a friend of mine now, and I loved dearly, Jimmy Hazel and 24/7 Spies came up not long after that. And I loved their records. Like there was all these cool bands doing different stuff. And I suddenly said to myself, hey, maybe I can do this. And I can kind of jump in and not worry about singing like all these people. And that's when I like started to take very serious lessons and became like, you know, like saying, hey, if I watch my mom do this, and if I'm going to do this right, I have to sing properly. I have to know what I'm doing. So that was just an incredibly inspiring, you know, time. So I would say kind of, if again, I'm giving you the long convoluted answer, that I'm somewhere there between like, I like rebel music and I like stuff that's, I tend to like stuff that's a little harder. Mm-hmm. So whether it be like reggae music or if it's like metal, you know, I loved a lot of like the thrash movement was my thing. Even though I love earlier metal too. I tend to like stuff that just like is a little more sharp and kind of pushes the boundaries. Like I said, I listen to the pop metal stuff But I just felt like lyrically sometimes it was like, oh, I just can't, like some of the lyrics just I couldn't totally get. It was fun. You know, as a Kiss fan, you dig it. But like, you know, when you sit back and you think about Christine 16, you're like, oh, this is weird. Like, it's a cool song when I'm a kid. I'm like 12 listening to it. But then you realize he's like an older dude talking, you know, he does the whole rap where I don't usually talk to girls. And I was like, whoa, when I got older, I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? He sounds like a dirty old man. So you kind of say to yourself, like, Dean, I love you. But like, you know, and I love Kiss. But like you started to say, well, okay, this was fun. This is how they saw the world. But then I can also talk and write music and see the world differently, and it's okay. And so I think a lot of the music in the late 80s in particular was doing that, and that's why I think you also had this explosion of amazing music in the 90s. Mm-hmm. You know, in the very late 80s, early 90s, I think everyone started to say, hey, I can do something different, still be heavy, still be like, you know. So you have like the Rage Against the Machines, you have like what eventually, you know, Soundgarden and stuff like that. Yeah. You had Alice in Chains, mm-hmm. which is really this amalgamation, or even stuff like, I loved the, especially the first two Saigon Kick records, mm-hmm. and they were from like Florida, you know, and they were doing this like weird kind of like heavy stuff. But then like the vocals are kind of Beatles-y, but like evil, and like the lyrics were weird, you know, like totally talking. It was kind of weird. It was almost like incorporated almost goth into like the metal things. So I always laugh when people talk about goth metal. I'm like, you listen to that first Saigon Kick record. It's like great, but it's a little disturbing. There's like this wicked kind of underbelly going on. But so I liked things like that where I could kind of like, where, hey, it's still melodic. You know, I talk, you know, I've rambled on, I argue with my friends about Pantera, and people always talk about the riffs, the guitar playing, you know, all this and drums. That stuff is amazing. They were amazing musicians. Mm-hmm. But I always say at the end of the day, the reason why Pantera is still talked about and why you can still have the band touring without the two brothers,
right,
is the songs. Mm-hmm. The song, like there was great songwriting in that. There were great hooks and pre-choruses and choruses. Yes, they were like shouted or yelled, but people kind of, your ears are open because the melodies were there melodically. Yeah. As heavy as it is, right, there's that thing going on, which is something that also I think a lot of the late 80s, early 90s stuff, which really impacted me heavy, I think there was the melodic sense that was there. So that's what I try to do with, you know, and try to achieve in this album, was to kind of like go for all my influences. A lot of it's really heavy or hard rock, but mm-hmm. the melodies have to be good, because if they're not, you know.
I'm big. Listen, I'm big on melodies, man. That drives me. I love, you know, whenever I'm writing, like I did two songs last night, actually, the early morning, you know, that my bandmate sent me, and I finally got to it because of all this pollen stuff. I didn't want to do it, you know. But yeah, man, melodies are big for me. I just love melodies. It drives me. I can't help it. It's just what it is.
Do you want to watch the classic metal show all day long? Do you have a Roku? If your answers are yes and yes, then you need to get Wowza TV on your Roku. It's free to install and brings you the classic metal show on your TV 24/7. Just look up and install Wowza TV in the Roku streaming store, and you can enjoy the CMS all day and night right on your TV. Yes, folks, this includes the live editions of the CMS as well. Install Wowza TV now on your Roku, and never be without the classic metal show again. Hail and Kill.
But I did want to ask you a question. DJ Eclipse, I don't know if you know who he is. He used to play for NY University what's that rap group? Fiction or... but he really, when he was down south, he got me into the dance hall, because he used to make the greatest dance hall mixtapes. DJ Eclipse, man, I get in my vehicle and I just drive around the city and I just bumped it as loud as, and you know, the bass was just so crazy. And I was just like, man, it's just amazing to me, man. So anyway, me just saying that, just talking about all the music that you're talking about, it's like you're still kind of educating me on so much more stuff because you are, listen, I love music, but you are a lover of music, man. It's just like it's another level. And I know many people like that who are into, I'm into everything, but you're into everything. It's just levels to it. And but I can appreciate it. Just like I said, man, you're educating me on a lot of stuff, man, as I'm listening and I'm excited about it. So I'm just like, okay, remember what he said here. Remember what he said here. But we can go back and watch this, and you can really get into it, man. So that's amazing, man. So before we go any further, all right, this is going to be a little personal question, man. I'm going to ask it, and I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to ask this question. So have you had any hair care companies reach out to you for sponsorship?
No, bring them on. I'll take that money. I'll do
you
good.
See the one,
I'll
listen, do, oh, over here. My goodness, listen, man, that's I'll a great do, picture, man. I'm trying I'll to do, tell you, man.
Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. Get me off, man.
I'm like say, Troy Pollard.
Sponsored by Clairol. Bring it.
Yeah, I was like, Troy Polamalu, man, it's over for you, man. We got the new guy in here.
Bring it.
Oh.
They can sponsor the tour. They can sponsor everything.
Indeed. That would be awesome.
Yep. Do it. Let's do it.
My brother, you have been blessed with an amazing gift from God, a child, a son. How do you feel you've been changed since his birth?
Oh, wow. It ups everything. You know, and if my wife were on this, she'd be laughing because, you know, when we decided we're going to get married, and I loved her, she was really honest and said, hey, you know, I'd like to have a child. And I kind of, because I think of my fears of not measuring up to being like the dad, like my dad was, mm-hmm. you know, because I knew my dad was not only like my dad, but he was like a father. Oh, so many of my friends were like, oh, your dad's like my dad, because they didn't have both their parents in the house. Mm. Particularly dads were, you know, not really around for a lot of my friends. Mm-hmm. So my dad kind of became a surrogate dad to a lot of people in the neighborhood and just my friends who loved him. And, you know, and he was just he was like a total dude, great guy. Always seemed like had this silent presence, always seemed to say the right thing, know the right thing to say, and was really funny and very passionate and loving. And so I kind of was like, oh, I can't be like that dad, you know? So I was like, if I can't be that great, I'm not going to do it. So I kind of said, I don't know if I want to do this, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, when she got pregnant, I just was like, oh yeah, well, we're going to do this.
Right.
And it's like been, you know, like revelatory, you know what I mean? The first thing I worried about, I got really nervous and scared at first. And then you kind of just, you know, and I remember, and my dad was still around, years before when my dad was still around, mm-hmm. He was around when my wife and I got married. He wasn't well enough to go to the ceremony, but he was so happy. And, you know, and he started having this conversation. He goes, well, he loved my wife. And he was like, hey, so when are you guys going to have kids? And I was like, oh, and I was like, dad, I can't do what you did, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you always knew what to do and blah, blah. And he looked at me, he's like, are you kidding me? Most of the time I didn't know what I was, you know, I just figured out as I was going. And I was looking at him like, I couldn't believe it. Cause my dad always seemed like, I know what road to go on. I know we don't have any money. We'll figure it out. He was always chill and made everyone feel like, oh, we're going to be fine. So I think my dad was just really good at kind of his game face was great, which is what I realized. And he revealed to me, and he's like, you just have to figure it out and be calm. And, you know, and so having a son was like everything, because it actually was one of the reasons why I wanted to do the solo record, because I felt like I had a lot more to say. I feel like I have a lot of, perspective in a way that I wouldn't have. And like, it opens up a whole other world, you know, like you kind of, it's not about you anymore. Right. It really isn't, you know, because even though we might say, oh, it's not about us, it's about everyone else. When you have a kid and you're really trying to be a present parent, it's really not about you at all anymore. And so you have to kind of think about, how do I share these messages? How am I presenting the world to somebody else? Right. How am I providing for somebody else? And can I do all this? My biggest thing was, how do I manage all of this? Mm-hmm. How do I provide, be a musician, an artist? How do I be a dad? Like all those things you get really scared about, nervous. And then you just figure it out and you say, you know what? It doesn't have to be the model of the father that you see on TV or what's been ingrained in us in society. You're present, you're given, you're making sure that you provide for your child, you know, financially, but also emotionally. I remember my dad working a lot of long hours. Now he'd leave, I'd never see him leave in the morning until I got older and I'd stay up really late and my dad was like getting up and whatever. But he'd leave the house at like before 5 a.m. He'd come home in the evening and we'd try to have dinner together and things like that. But my dad worked long hours and stuff. And I remember thinking to myself that like I never felt that he wasn't present.
Mm-hmm.
That was the cool thing, whether it be a phone call or sometimes I go visit him at work in the city. He worked in restaurants and he was a food and beverage manager. And we'd sit down and he'd like make time for me. And I always felt that. And it was great. And even if I didn't reach out to him, I felt like he was there. And I always felt that like when we went on trips, he was really present. So I thought to myself, you know, you don't have to fit in that model. You just have to make sure you're present, you know, and you know that, you know, my son knows that I'm there. So it's been just an amazing thing. And I laugh about things I didn't think I would ever laugh about. I hear myself saying things. I'm like, when would I ever get into like an argument about this or talk about this? And then also what's cool is that it grounds you. Mm-hmm. Because very often, you know, especially in New York City, we talked about New York early on, right? Everything is really fast. Mm-hmm. Everything is fast paced. You order food fast, you get on the train, you move quickly. You know, it's you're on to the next thing. Even if you do something really great, you're like, oh, that was great. Okay, now I got to do something else.
Right.
It's almost like you don't have time to kind of step back a bit. And having, you know, my son's 9, having a 9-year-old to kind of pull you aside and show you something, or like, hey, dad, you know, look at the sky, it's doing blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And me taking the deep breath and going, oh, yeah, it is like that. Like, and I was talking about things, or he's really smart and very inquisitive. So he wants to know why certain things are the way they are. Right. And it's really nice to be able to kind of reflect that way and hear, and also seeing how this world is now with him there. So there's a lot of music on my solo record that definitely makes me think about how I'm seeing the world, not necessarily through his eyes, but maybe through a more generalized view, as opposed to just kind of like moving forward. It's kind of taking some time to sit back and kind of get a better perspective on things, listening a lot more, right? You have to be a better listener.
Yes.
I'm semi-successful on that, but you know, like really like the idea of listening, you know, mm-hmm. So we're saying it's not just about me, but it's also like being valuable and like listening, like, you know, to what someone else needs or how they're feeling.
Yes. You know? Now, awesome, man, because, you know, I have I have 2 daughters and a son, and I have my daughter and son, they're twins, the younger ones.
You're a superhero, man.
Man, you know, my wife and I, we put our time into our children. We always wanted to make sure that we were there. There was other stuff that we could have done, but they, just like you said, they were the most important thing. It wasn't about us anymore. It was about them. So, you know, they played basketball. They all graduated from college. They're all doing well. Everything is love. It really is beautiful. My son and oldest daughter, they're going to Paris today. So, you know, it's like she just got back from Bora Bora. I mean, when we look at our children, we're just thankful and grateful, you know, but, you know, we know how we raise them. We know that they are grown now. You know, we can't control things. We just feel that we've given them the morals and values to be better human beings. And so we pray that that's what they're going to do. So, yes, indeed. So you're already on the path, man. You and your wife, you know, I applaud you. Just enjoy the moments, because I always say growing, growing, grown, and then they're gone. And then it's just like, man, you know. So every time that they call or, you know, I'm talking to them on the phone, man, I get emotional, because it's like they take me back to a time, and just seeing them just, man, it's just amazing, man. You know, anyway, I'm not going to keep talking about them, but, you know, I do get emotional, but because, you know,
it's okay.
The twin daughter, she's about to she'll get her doctorate next year. So it's just like,
that's amazing.
All of them are successful. One works in the medical field. The oldest one works in the medical field. She's doing well. My other son, he's down in Atlanta doing his thing, you know, working on, he loves music too. And anyway, they keep me live and vibrant and all those things, man. It's just a blessing, man. So I love that. And I wanted to ask you, because, you know, when I went out there looking and seeing, and I look at that little handsome fella right there, I was just like, look at this, man. Look at this beautiful family. So it's amazing, man. So
thank you so much.
Yeah. So let's chop it up about four trips ahead from the 505 sessions to the latest EP Remnants. How much do you feel your sound has grown and what the band and your bandmates mean to you?
Oh, wow. That's a great set of questions. So the first thing is that I think that I'm so proud of how Four Trips Ahead is kind of like weathered storms and kind of kept doing it, even when it's not been lucrative or at all. You know, we're kind of doing it because we really believe in it. And it's kind of grown exponentially. We have like a lot of interest and real fan base and things like that.
Right.
I think that, you know, the first thing I want to say is that, like, I love playing with those guys, and I love, you know, I mean, my friendships with them are very deep. Like, we're really, you know, we're brothers and we really love each other. We love, you know, each other's families, and we're very linked in that way. And, you know, and even when we're like yelling at each other, it's all out of love and wanting to do things and so forth. But there's a tremendous amount of respect. I love playing with them because I love that everyone kind of is open to ideas. There's not this like fear where like, if I show them this or if I sing this and, you know, they're going to think certain things or like, you know, this my ideas. It's a very open creative space I take for granted. Well, I shouldn't say I take it for granted. I don't take it for granted, but I think very often I've been in spaces in the past where I feel like I was showing cool stuff, but people were very closed off. And even though they were good musicians, they weren't as open to that, or they were very judgmental. Or saying, well, we kind of write stuff that's only like this, so that's not going to work. We, in Four Trips, everyone is throwing in their ideas all the time. And it's always cool because I love the beginning ideas. And then when it becomes is something,
right,
the sum of all the parts, you know, like, it's really special and great. And it's been really exciting playing. Like, I love the progression of the music. I feel like we really caught our stride with the Memories EP. It's like when we really, because I always say that, like, I love a lot of the songs and the earlier stuff. I think the production wasn't quite as fleshed out. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we really started to capture what we sounded like around the Memories. And then the last few releases have been really, like, I'm super excited about. And I feel like I became less afraid of being, like, stepping into a production role, mm-hmm, and kind of saying, hey, we should sound like this. We should work with this engineer. We should do these things. And the great thing is that everyone in the band has really been so supportive of that. And they get it. And they see that I kind of like to spend more time and have a little more vision in terms of the sonicness of it. But everyone plays great. We write as a collective and together. And everyone always comes with it, is really inventive with ideas. I love singing with Dan, the bass player, and Brian, my guitar player, has like started to sing a lot more. Mm-hmm. So we have this really cool three-part harmony thing live. The musicianship in that band is just really tremendous. It makes you step up. Yeah. Excellent. Everyone just steps up. Yeah. Thank you. Everyone really, everyone comes in, and it's not like a show off thing. It's like everyone wants it to be really great. And what's cool is that it's like, it's really the chemistry, and it's magical. It's something that you can't really put your finger on. You know what I mean? It just is something that's very special. Mm-hmm. And like, it allows, in that creative space, it allows people to do really cool things and not be afraid of it, like maybe taking some time to happen, like to gel. And also trying out ideas and saying, you know, I don't think this is quite working here. Or like, we can table that. And no one gets like, oh, well, this is my part. Or I really, you know, it's right. Very open. Like, people are like, okay. Or I can say things like, hey, I love all this stuff, but Brian, I think you can do something better there. You can come up with something better. And he does. Mm-hmm. You know, I think my bass player, Dan, is possibly one of the best musicians on earth. He's one of those really annoying people that plays a lot of things really well. Like, he's an incredible bass player, and he's an incredible guitar player. He grew up, he and Brian were both guitar players, but they were friends. Brian's like, I want to be in a band with you. You have to learn bass. because I can't, my fingers are too small. Literally, I quote, end quote, I'm too small. My fingers are too small. I can't learn bass. You should be a bass player. And Dan's like, okay, well, you're my friend, so I'll just learn bass. And, you know, and he's also a great singer. You know, he's just a great songwriter himself. You know, my drummer, Ken, is just fantastic, you know, young and like fired up and really creative. And, you know, his family's got a Puerto Rican background. So he often thinks about his rhythm and his groove sits in a different place. Mm. And I feel like it really has also elevated things in a cool way. So you just have this great mixture of things. And what's been exciting is that we've actually, I mean, the pandemic kind of quieted things, but we were able to release an EP that was eventually supposed to be a record, but we finished half of, literally we finished recording half the songs right before the pandemic shut everything down. So we literally mixed and mastered and did the artwork and released this EP in the midst of this terrible time and got this incredible response. And then when, you know, the pandemic lifted, we played a bunch of shows, which was great. And now we've kind of gotten even more independent, where we're at the music building in the city where we were rehearsing for years and years. And our drummer, Ken, built his home studio. And so we're literally, when I talk about Queens, we are in Queens, we're there, and like we're, you know, rehearsing. And we've been writing for the last, I don't know, year and a half, maybe year, like really seriously. And we're with the intentions of going into record, hopefully the summer and early fall. And we're going to go back to spin where we normally do. And I'm like, I'm as excited about my solo album as I am about the new FTA stuff. Because a lot of people have been asking, what are you guys up to? And I'm like, there's a lot of food cooking. And I think it's going to be really exciting to people. So I feel very blessed that I have, you know, I'm able to play with such incredible musicians that really like each other. I know it sounds funny. I mean, you've been in those situations where you're playing shows, you're touring, and you're not particularly, you're playing fine. The live thing is fine, but there's something that's missing in terms of the interaction, the creativity, where you can't just kind of be honest with people, or people are not talking to one another because of silliness. And I think that we all are long past that. So we're really candid. We're upset about stuff, we chat, but it's great because when we're rehearsing, we don't hold on because we're so open. We go in and we just have fun and we play, and we're working hard, and we're, you know, we're really creating stuff and writing these great songs, because I think that people are able to kind of expand and not be afraid of sharing anything that they do. And that's very, as I've gotten older, I realized how rare that is. Cause like I said, very often you kind of get in professional situations and people play well, but there's not, the heart's not there.
Right.
And with Four Trips Ahead, I always feel the heart is there. I always feel like there's like a good mission. I always feel that like creatively it's different. And I like that we're in this kind of interesting place where we're heavier than most of the pop and hard rock stuff that you hear. We're not quite like ultra metal, although they're metal elements. Not quite prog, even though there's definitely some progressive elements in terms of like arrangements and kind of some of the playing. We're kind of like somewhere in the middle of all of that, but we're taking all of that and kind of creating our own path.
Right.
So the intentions are actually is that I'm going to be really promoting the solo record, which drops in a week or so. Mm-hmm. And then as I'm going out, maybe doing some solo shows and promoting that, the FTA is going to go into the studio. So it's going to be kind of like a piggyback ride and just putting out all this music. Cause I feel like I'm swimming in a lot of great music, playing with like my great solo band. Ken, actually the drummer from Four Trips, is playing drums in both, which is also really cool to hear because his approach is a bit different, in as it should be, which has been great. So like, I'm playing in these worlds with like all these great musicians, and I just feel like there's all this inspiration going on, so it's really, really, it's very exciting. And I think that I feel like Four Trips, the next thing that we do is definitely going to be it's going to be kind of our sound, but it's going to take it to yet again another level. There's some really, really, I mean, I feel like I've been sitting on like great, kind of with the solo record, I felt the same way. It was like done, and then we had to wait a little bit to get things. I feel like I'm finally going to let out one of my secrets, which has been the solo record, and everyone's going to hear these songs for the first time in a while. You know, some of them have hearing just, you know, the singles, but I've been living with those for a long time. So I'm excited about tracking the new Four Trips Ahead stuff, because it's going to be like that too. We have like, I feel like I have these great secrets I can't wait to share. And people have been like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, you know, hang on, you're going to be knocked out. So it's really cool. I feel like we've been stepping up, having the new studio space. And as you know, having your own space to be able to do things, yes, and kind of that, it's just, it changes the energy, and it's been very inspirational too. So we have all this stuff going on. So like I said, there are all these secret things that won't be secrets very long, you know?
Let me tell you, once again, ladies and gentlemen, what I always love is when the guest is having conversation and they roll, you just went down, boom, 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 boom. And I'm just like, I don't even have to ask that, because it was just beautiful how you went into it. And you really, you know, you dove into like talking about your solo stuff also. Listen, you answer so many questions. It's just amazing. I love it. I'm telling you, I love it when it just flows amazingly like that. Because, you know, coming off a successful, you know, with Four Trips Ahead, doing that and then going into your solo thing. And you already kind of said, like, you know, you wanted to do a little something different. You know, so what do you feel differs from the Trips Ahead? What is different in your solo project?
Yeah, I think that, so the first thing that's really different that was very key to me is that, especially when I started like putting together like who I'm playing with and whatever, is like everyone looks at you and in Four Trips Ahead, it's like kind of like we're all like looking at each other, like, hey, what do you want to do? Or, you know, and it's more collaborative. And then when solo stuff, everyone's like turning to you like, all right, so, you know, what do you want to do? And you're like, yeah, it's a great question, you know, because I work collaboratively, you know, I don't play all the instruments, so I need to, you know, write and work with people. So that was cool and challenging and fun, you know, exciting for me. I had a vision. I just felt like I feel like I had a lot to say. I feel like there was a lot, some of it, I looked at older material that I'd written with other band members before Four Trips. And then I was writing with some other people, and I kind of wanted to revisit those ideas. I felt like they were never captured right. And I felt like a lot of lyric, what was going on, I thought they were great songs, and musically they were great. I felt like they just captured right. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things. And then I got together with other musicians, you know, and we wrote. And I expected to write a song or two. And then we ended up writing like half of an album. Awesome. And I thought they were all great. I was like, you know, this is a record. This is like a thing. So how do I, we actually probably wrote almost a record's worth of stuff. And then I picked my favorites. Gotcha. And then I kind of looked and said, well, how does this all work? Is this a statement? And I started to see themes arise. I felt like very strongly about what was going on. And it was also exciting. Like I even recorded one of the songs, was recorded actually at one of my close friends and the guitar player, Glenn Sherman, who's on this record, at his home studio, mm-hmm, which was a really cool experience. We just kind of went in and he played like all these incredible guitars and kind of embellished. And it was really, you know, the song is Simple Man on the record. No, mm-hmm, it's not the Allman Brothers song. It's a song. So like we went in there and like really like kind of messed with the arrangement a bit and really brought it together. So creatively, what's different is just I just got to explore writing and arranging in a different way. I think on the solo thing, there's a lot of vocal stuff going on. It's not quite a Queen record, but if you really listen to a lot of it, there's a lot of vocal going on in different places, mm-hmm, that's a bit different than FTA. Certainly like my voice is the same, so you have the same tone, some of the same heavy approaches and things like that, but there's some other more subtle things I think are a bit different. I also think that dynamically there's some more stark dynamics going on, like ultra quiet to ultra heavy very quickly. Mm-hmm. A little bit of my signature kind of thing going on, but it's a little bit different lyrically. There's a lot that's going on that's very personal and ultra personal, and I'm kind of wearing it a little more. I think with Four Trips, I try to be a little more, even if I have specific goals in mind, I sometimes put on more of the cap of like characters, mm-hmm, you know, or I try to leave the lyrics to be a little less obvious, a little more ambiguous, where you're not really, you kind of can mean this, it can mean something else.
Right.
I think with my solo record, I was a little more having my heart on my sleeve, kind of talking about things on a very personal level and not being afraid to do so.
Right.
And then just kind of confronting some stuff that, you know, we were talking about our kids and like, you know, and the world that we're trying to leave behind and feeling frustrated that some of the things that seem like we shouldn't even be having this conversation about in the 21st century, we still are mm-hmm. in really ugly ways. So, like I tracked, the lead vocal and all the vocals for Freedom's Door, the final song. I'll be honest with you, that song, which is kind of the epic closing song,
right,
and became the title of the album. Mm-hmm. That song was a mother, you know, like I knew when we wrote it, every time I sang it, I felt like this is hitting some heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. And like lyrically, it was hitting a lot of things. And then, and I know where a lot of the inspiration for it came from, like a lot of situations, old and new. And then I actually tracked all the vocals on the anniversary of Charlottesville. Mm. And it was weird because it wasn't intentional. But I remember going in and we listened, and it was actually the last song that had to be done for the album. I was kind of avoiding it, not because I was thinking it was so hard to sing per se in terms of the technicality of it, but emotionally the investment in it was heavy. So I kind of made sure I did everything else until, and that was going to be where I ended. And I wanted to see what happened with it. And because I knew emotionally it was going to hit a lot of things. And then we ended up, I think, on a break after I had done pretty much the lead vocal. Mm-hmm. And the engineer and I were really excited about it. And we walked down to the lounge and for a break, and I'm drinking tea and I'm watching, and it was the anniversary of Charlottesville. And we were watching a lot of it. And, you know, without me saying anything, Nick turned to me and said, "Hey, man, this is some heavy shit that's going on tonight."
Right.
There's like, right. He said, "It doesn't surprise me that your lead vocal has got this kind of energy." So in going back and doing all the harmony vocals and all the other secondary leads and things after recognizing what it was even more palpably heavy. And and it was really an amazing, almost exorcism of demons, and kind of recognizing like what we have to do. Like, you know, the idea is like how close we are to this concept that we call freedom or democracy. But like it's like we're at the door, but we can never kind of walk through.
Right.
And there are all these different elements there. So it became like kind of this heavy, heavy thing. And then what's funny is that we finished it. And then I couldn't listen to it for a little bit. And, you know, sometimes when I hear it on a day, like I'm super proud of it. It was the second single that released the video for, and Wayne Joyner did an amazing job mm-hmm. on the video. And it, you know, it also kind of made it come into fruition a lot of what's being talked
right.
about.
Right.
So, you know, like it's really important for me for music to be able to strike a chord and hit people differently. So I think that with my solo record, I was intentionally not becoming unafraid to be vulnerable and unafraid to talk about things that, you know, I don't necessarily feel is fair for Four Trips to talk about because there are four of us. So mm-hmm. it's more of a band identity. Whereas solo, I feel like I can really step up and say, "Hey, this is a little more of who I am. And I'm unafraid to kind of chat about this and talk about it." And then there's some things like there's some things that are like totally about like my family and things like that. So and you know, it was funny that you talked about or asked about my parents, because some of it, you know, like the song "Security," which is right before Freedom's Door, it's one of the lighter, it's probably the lightest thing in the verses mm-hmm. That's on the album. And that's just, you know, about my parents. So the first line is, "None of my four parents gave themselves up for fear."
Right.
Right. So like, it kind of is like things that are a little bit, you know, if you want to kind of get to know me as an artist or know what I'm about without explaining every little thing, it's kind of there too. So what's cool is about also on Freedom's Door as an album, you have some, like, I mean, anyone's the Four Trips Ahead fan is going to be super excited because you're going to hear things that you really dig about that band in the solo stuff. But then there's some things that are really heavy. Like we were talking about, like some of the influences. So like,
right.
you know, whether it be the Bad Brains, or I think about, I love the group The Refused. I love a lot of I love things like Murphy's Law and funny kind of like hardcore stuff. And I liked a lot of fast things too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were talking about Anthrax or Stormtroopers of Death or, you know, or any, like, you know, I loved early Exodus and things like that. They were really heavy. And we have, there are two songs, Move Closer and Vixen Swastikas, which are straight up like ultra heavy kind of punk attitude, but played more like hardcore. Mm-hmm. Really tight and heavy, and you're going to hear a much more aggressive thing than you would have actually heard it from Four Trips in that way, which might shock people. But that I was like, hey, this is my defining solo record, so I'm going to kind of want everyone to hear every aspect of who I am. And so that was really cool to be able to do that.
Oh, awesome, man. Listen, I just love the fact that you're thorough with it, man. You answer these questions thoroughly, and it's good. Once again, it's good for me. Because I want that knowledge. I want that information. And I think it's good for the listener. If you love music, you want to hear these things. You want to, you know, that's once again, like reading the liner notes, as you were saying, you know, there's just certain things you want to know. And so now, nah, man, listen, great segment there also, man. It's a great segment. So how easy or difficult was it to get all the great creatives of this project to bless you with their talents? Because you had a lot of people come in and do some things from what I read. So I was like, how'd you get all of these people and say like, yeah, I'm there, I'm with it.
Man, that's the coolest thing about, other than how the songs came out and the actual album itself, the other coolest thing in the world is that I'm so close to, like, I've talked to you, Wax Poetic, about Four Trips, and it's been great because I'm playing with people I love,
right?
Literally. So two of my oldest friends, who are two of the musicians I respect most, my bass player, Harold Skeet, and my guitar player, Glenn Sherman, I've known them since literally teenage years. Right. We grew up together in the scene, and they're great musicians and have different approaches. And they're most of all great people I really love and respect, and are just funny, super smart, incredibly talented people. Like, both of them are superstar, you know, musicians, and I've always wanted to play with them, and we kind of just never happened. Mm-hmm. And then I had this opportunity, and they've been so about it. They're definitely just as much a part of the success for me to be able to successfully put out this record. It started with them. Nick Cipriano, who's been, who's essentially like a secret fifth member. He was actually in Four Trips for a while, played drums for us when we didn't have a drummer. He's an amazing musician, producer, engineer, you know, spiritual guru, whatever you want to call it. He's all those things. So he has been, he played drums on half of this album too, which is great because he doesn't play really live anymore. He's more of a producer, behind the scenes guy, owns an incredible studio where they do all this great work with big, you know, big companies like Spotify. And he found the time to kind of be about this. I think there was just like an understanding. There's a lot of love and respect for what I do as a singer and performer and as an artist. And they just were excited about the songs and shows. And so I was really lucky to have that. And then Ken came on from FTA to play and write and co-write like the other half of the album. And I have Phil Ortiz playing the other guitars, who's brought like a bit more of a punkier kind of attitude kind of thing going on, kind of somewhere between like punk and hard rock, mm-hmm. Groovy stuff. And he's just really super talented. And so it became this hodgepodge. And what's so neat is that everyone, with the exception of Nick Cipriano, who's on the, you know, West Coast now and doing whatever, everyone's in my solo band too. They were all like, once we finished, I was like, hey, maybe I'll do some solo gigs. And they were all like, oh, we got to play this record.
Right.
It shows we should do it. They've been more, you know, more forward about like, we got to play this stuff. And mm-hmm. I think the album just really came together. There was a great, again, chemistry matters a lot. You can have a lot of great players in a room, and if the chemistry isn't there, it just sometimes isn't there. And I was very lucky that I was able to kind of keep that chemistry and find people to work together that I thought mentally would work, because a lot of it is also just matching personalities. It's not just people that can play parts really well or have a great sound. It has to be a willingness and understanding of the songs and the arrangements and the emotion behind it, and then the willingness to play with other people in a way. And what's so great is that, you know, I've really realized that there's no ego in the room really with, you know, my solo stuff or Four Trips, but definitely with my solo stuff, there's no ego. I mean, yeah, it's my project, it's under my name and all the other stuff, but everyone is the space to be creative and play, and there's a real camaraderie there. So that's been amazing. We had a great rehearsal, you know, two nights ago. So like it's just really, really special. And I think that everyone is feeling excited and excited for like upcoming shows that we're trying to book around the release of the solo album. But everyone's super excited that people are hearing it. We're getting some great responses from the singles. So I think it's just, it's neat. My guitar player Glenn is always like, man, I play all the other rock stuff that's out there. I just put on our solo record. I'm like, man, this thing hangs. It hangs. It's better than that. You know, and I laugh and I get excited too, but it's really a fulfilling for me that other musicians I respect and love and who play on really great professional albums feel a passion and feel strongly about what we've created together. So again, just very lucky to have that. And also I want to mention Roger Leon, who mastered my solo record, and he's mastered the last four or five FTA recordings. He's just incredible. Mm-hmm. And really he's a fan of, you know, Four Trips, a fan of my voice. And I can tell, like, you know, he's worked with Rush, he's worked with Madonna, he's worked with, you know, as big as it gets, a lot of heavy artists. And what's great is that, like, I know that he shows the same love and care for my music on a smaller label than he does a major label artist. Right. And I think it shows. And I think that, and I think all that came together really, you know, it took some time, but I feel like the end result, the record, is really showing of that. So I, you know, like I said, I feel very, very lucky. It takes time to kind of build those relationships, but I didn't want it to be just like, I didn't want to have a bunch of cool songs, Lord Nelson, that were just like, oh, this is cool. And oh, Peter did this kind of cute solo thing. Mm-hmm. And he kind of put it out and he recorded in this little studio here and whatever. There's nothing wrong with that. Listen, there's some artists that do that. There's some people that say, oh, I want to put out a record. I'm in this heavy band. And I want to put out an all acoustic kind of thing. You know, I get that. I understand that. I don't want to sound like I'm going to diss it, but I am going to diss it a little bit. I'm kind of like, I feel like I'm a hard rock guy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of other elements to do. There's some metal, there's prog, there's, you know, there's other stuff, but I'm like a hard rock guy. And I felt like I felt like a lot of solo artists, we used to have all these great solo artists that would do hard rock records that really, you know, you put on, you're like, wow, this really rocks. It's not just like, oh, a solo thing. You know, it's like, no, it's going to be really good and, you know, and hooky. And I think like I achieved that. I was able to do that. So I kind of had intentions, like I'm going big or I'm going home. You know, I'm not going to just put out something just to kind of have some sort of cool, like indie kind of cred or whatever. I want to put out something that really was a statement that if you picked it up, it's as happening as anything else you can get. So that's why it took a little bit longer, but I think it, you know, music from a musical sound standpoint, I feel very fulfilled and I feel very, very proud of what it is. And I believe it stands up to, you know, most of what you're hearing and exceeds it in a lot of ways. And I think also some of the passion for the songs are played in such a way because there's passion, there's belief and connection to the message of the songs. It's not just, like I said, it's not just a bunch of people in a room just playing. There was kind of like intentions behind it. There were conversations. What is the song about? Me right. Sharing lyrics and us really, and me saying, you know, I hear more of this, or, and people being open saying, oh, okay, I get what you're trying to say. And so, yeah, there was great playing on it, but it's in context of the song.
So let me ask you this. What makes Peter Wilson and FTA and Must Watch and Listen?
I think the it goes back to some of the things I was saying, but I think what makes it a must watch and listen, you know, is kind of like that it's sincere. Mm-hmm. It's timeless. So it's one of those things that, yeah, it could be something that's trending or like something that hangs with what's playing out there, but it's its own singular vision. And it will sound good. And in 10 years, you'll pick up my solo album and be like, awesome. This is a great record, which is my intention.
Yes.
And I think that also it offers something that's a little more creative and different than what you're normally getting. I feel like sometimes a lot of, and I say this from being guilty of it in the past, that I think sometimes people try to make hard rock and metal records in particular that kind of fit a certain mold.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The band photos are the same. They use the same producers that everyone else uses. Maybe even some of the same equipment. It's kind of the same arrangement, songwriting structure. You can almost predict it. Even if I like it, you know, there are a lot of bands I like out there, but I think, and it's no stepping on the musicianship, but I feel like it's kind of, it's got like a template. There's like a hard rock metal template, you know, that you're in. And I feel like definitely in Four Trips Ahead and definitely with my solo record, Freedom's Door, the idea is to not do that. The idea was that, yeah, there'll be some things that are different, and also to pay attention to melody. Like, wow. I don't feel like there was a sacrificing of heaviness and there wasn't a sacrificing of melody. So I think that when people want, I mean, I love records that I can just like dig into melodically. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with both Four Trips and definitely with my solo album, Freedom's Door, you can dig into those melodically, like it'll speak to you. And that there are songs that will stay with you. Mm-hmm. I think a lot more than a lot of what you hear, you know, on the radio, if you hear hard rock or metal on the radio, and definitely if you're streaming stuff or if you're looking for something new, I feel like that's the key to it and what makes people kind of convert to what we're doing. You know, when people hear it or they see us live
yeah.
Definitely when you watch the video clips from my solo record, you know, I have three out now. I have one for release, one for the title track, Freedom's Door. Mm-hmm. And we just put out a new one a few weeks ago for Sunshine.
Sunshine, yes.
Yeah, all of those kind of, like, there's, you're watching stories and you can watch the lyric videos, but sonically you're going to hear things that really are exciting. And I also think arrangement-wise, things will come at you a little bit differently.
Right. Well, listen. All the music is great, man. Just like I said, you have exceptional musicians. You guys are doing a great job. And I enjoy just listening to it and watching the videos. And it's all, it's magnificent, man. I'm telling you, I enjoyed it. There's no doubt about it. And so me saying that, what can we expect for the remainder of 2024 for you?
So if I'm doing a short order of things, I would say to you that we're going to be my solo band is going to be doing some shows. We're trying mm-hmm. to arrange stuff that makes sense. You know, we're offered a couple really cool things in New York City, some festival things. We want to do some shows just to kind of get the live legs, because rehearsing the band in a studio and recording is very different than coming out and doing that. So that's going to be kind of fun and exciting and cool. And I'm very excited to play my solo record and do a solo gig. I've never done solo shows. So this is going to be, even though I've played a ton of shows in my life, this is going to be a really cool experience. So that's going to be happening. We're going to promote the record. I wasn't intentionally going to put out more singles, but there are going to be videos. Okay. I'm already in talks about doing another couple of videos, one for probably Mirror and maybe one for Dixon Swastika. So that will come out in the coming, you know, months. So we have a bunch of promo. The album comes out in about a week. So there's going to be a lot of promotion on the solo stuff. And then with Four Trips, we're going to be writing and actually recording. So all these new things that we've been talking about, we're going to record. I definitely see us playing some shows, because I think we're getting a little antsy mm-hmm. in terms of playing shows. But I think that because I'm working on promoting the solo record, and I know my guitar player is recording kind of an instrumental guitar nutso record. He's kind of busy doing stuff. My drummer, Ken, is going to be putting out his projects, a new album in the fall for Homeric. So we're just trying to balance everything around all those releases. But I definitely think there'll be a new FTA record probably in 2025.
Cool.
With maybe a single at the end of the year, but if not, definitely next year will be a live FTA. But what's exciting now that I've finished a solo record and I have like guys I'm playing with and we're going to do some shows, is the fact that, you know, we're even talking about, are we going to do some more? We're going to record another record, which is kind of my intention was to put out this one album and make sure it's awesome. But now it's kind of becoming other things. And, you know, my label decided to put it out. I was going to put it out with another indie label, but then the label that does FTA, Dr. Music Records, was really excited. They heard and they were like, we can do this well. So I think I'm doing a great job so far. So yeah, so I think that it's limitless. But yeah, I'm hoping, you know, I'm really hoping that I can do some like more major touring, but of course there has to be the financial stuff behind it to be able to do it. So those are things we're exploring. But you know, the hopes are mainly to just get as many people as possible to check out, you know, my solo album Freedom's Door and to take it from there. So
of course, man. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, my last question for you, young man, and this has been a great time. I really appreciate you taking the time. I really, every guest that comes on here, the time that I spend with them is priceless to me. I am so thankful and grateful that they have taken their time to spend some time with the big guys. So, you know, wait a minute, hold on. How tall are you?
6'5".
Man, I'm telling you, man, it's crazy. So am I. It's an amazing thing, man. Listen, it's just all
vibes, man. Yeah,
6'5", man. Listen, what did my one guy tell me? He said, "Because I don't, you know, I'm straight edge. I don't drink or smoke or anything like that." He said, "Well, you don't need to get high. You're already 6'5". And I love it. I love it. My boy Joel Star. But anyway, so my last question is, what was the last song you listened to?
The last song I listened to. Let's see. I listened to Bobby Hutcherson this morning. Mm-hmm. So I've been listening to, I was listening to him this morning. But actually, that'd be cheating a little bit because that I actually listened to early in the morning. I was listening to that whole record. I probably would say the last song I listened to was The Wailers' Catch a Fire. So it was we were listening to the original records. So the last song on the album is Midnight Ravers. Mm-hmm. So that's the last song I was listening to. Oh. I think vocally is possibly one of the most beautifully arranged and hard hitting songs ever. Because it's the harmony vocal is Peter Tosh and Bunny Wailer doing these haunting vocals against Bob's killer vocal, you know, killer lead, that rough vocal, but you have their voices, you know, and they, you know, I just always, that song used to like totally knock me out as a child when my first major headphone experience was that. So I just got a really cool, I've been holding out to save money to get the really high collector's edition of Catch a Fire, which have different live recordings and the Jamaican actual, version of the record. I don't know if you know, but it's a different version than when they polished it up in the UK. And so it's kind of like it hits almost a little harder. So I was listening to that this morning and thinking about, man, isn't it grand? So powerful, right? You know, and it's crazy to me that record is as old as it is too.
What's so wild is that I tell everybody music is a time machine, man. And it just like you talking about that, like you can remember back being a child and listening to it, man. Listen, amazing, 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 man. So listen, I always like to ask that question because we as musicians and artists, it's like there's no telling what we're listening to because we really love music. So we're listening to all kinds of things. So, young man, the floor is yours. Is there anything you want to say? You want to talk some noise to somebody? You want to show some love or whatever? Right now, just speak and say whatever you want to, man. This floor is yours, my brother.
So the floor has been mine for a while. I want to just say to you, Lord Nelson, thank you so much for the opportunity. This was a really cool, different kind of podcast, and I felt it was great. I love the questions you asked, and I felt like it was just cool spending time with you, and I hope that whenever I have something else in you, we'll be able to do it again.
Anytime. But listen. You'll have to listen. All you got to do is let me know. Just walk on in. Come on in, put your feet up, and we're good.
There is one person I want to shout out. I want to shout out Eric Sanders, drummer extraordinaire, who kind of connected us, who's just a great musician and player. That was very cool of him to do that.
Yes, indeed. Eric Sanders, my guy, drummer extraordinaire. Every Monday, he's got a new a vid out there on Facebook, and it's always amazing. He's an amazing guy, and he played a lot on Stuck Mojo projects that I was a part of. And just one love for him and his family, man. He's a great dude. There's no doubt about it, man. And thank you, E. Really appreciate you, man. So, my brother, thank you once again. It's been a great time. And Freedom's Door, yo, solo joint. It's amazing, man, and you're handling business, man. And once again, I just thank you very, very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to hang out with me for a little bit, man. It's been a great time, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lord Nelson.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, you know it is. It's the big guy with the big show, the Lord Nelson, that is. Yes, indeed. From the podcast Live and Loud with the Lord on the CMS Network with Five Royals Entertainment. And with this handsome young man right here, the hair is unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know who it is. Somebody give me. Listen, sponsor this guy. Let's get it right. Let's get it right. The amazing, one more time, the amazing Mr. Peter Wilson. Yes, indeed, man. Thank you so much, bro. I really appreciate it.
Assured Window Cleaning specializes in window cleaning, chandelier cleaning, blind cleaning, gutter cleaning, and post-construction cleaning. In business since 1947, Assured Window Cleaning has proudly been serving its customers in Cleveland for 75 years. As a family-owned and operated business, Assured Window Cleaning has built their reputation on trust and delivering the best results possible. When you need window cleaning services for your home or business, contact Assured Window Cleaning. We're one of the top window cleaning companies in all of Cleveland for both residential and commercial. Visit our website today at www.assuredwindowcleaning.com or call us at 440-989-0122 for a quote. And remember, everybody knows Tony. Contact Assured Window Cleaning today.